All right, Caitlin and I are here to talk about no misconduct. But first, I have several political articles. There's a pro-Trump candidate who is a preacher, and he wants to revive the House Un-American Activities Committee in order to prosecute and execute the parents of LGBTQ plus kids on the grounds that, you know, there are no transsexual people, they're just victims of parent abuse and all that jazz. So there's that stuff, which is pretty popular on the right now. And the Supreme Court is expected to reverse the Miranda ruling, which is the one that forced all the cops to give you a warning before they arrest you, and take that back to the states so the individual states can decide what rights convicts have, or what rights accused people have that they're arrested. And a GOP commission in New Mexico has refused to certify the vote, which is illegal. They have no reason for this, except they say they just don't like the fact that they use the voting machines. They think all the voting machines are rigged because, of course, they're listening to Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and such. And they're trying to order them in court to certify to the vote because they're refusing to. This is not anything I was worried about. If this spreads, of course, that's the end of American democracy. If all over the place Republicans refuse to accept the outcome of elections, which is certainly what Trump wants them to do, then there's no point having elections if people don't believe in the outcome of the elections. Then we just have some other system like a dictatorship or something. But anyway, the part I thought was interesting is there is a positive article in the Daily Beast by David Rothkopf saying the institutions might not be crumbling after all. And so I looked at this in the hope of finding something good. And he claims there are four things to feel good about. First, of course, as we're seeing in the January 6 hearings, a bunch of Republicans opposed this, like Bill Barr, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, even people who were deeply in the thick of it. They hit a limit when they couldn't go along with it anymore. And now they feel like trying to pretend that they were against the coup all along, which shows, you know, that there are a considerable amount of Republicans who are not on board with ending American democracy and replacing it with a dictatorship. A surprising number of them are, but when they try to do it, they get a lot of pushback from Republicans. And at a few other points claiming that they get weaker, like can't even find the other. Remember, one of the others is the progress on the gun control, showing they can cooperate to some extent. But anyway, I've been trying to figure out what to make of all this as I watched the January 6 hearings, which are very impressive at promoting putting out the truth, but the truth doesn't matter. And the GOP is going to roar in like a tidal wave on Biden's unpopularity and economic problems. And the right wing doesn't care about the truth at all, I think. And so but I think really it might be okay, because I think we're going to have an overwhelming GOP majority, not a small one. And that means the GOP will not be ruled by its extreme fringe. And anyway, I think this might turn out all right, especially if Biden does not run again. The Democrats are getting quite forceful about not letting Biden run again. And if Biden doesn't run again, then Trump probably won't run again. And then it might move to people that are younger and less crazy. And I think, you know, for all of his flaws, DeSantis is not going to push the election lie. He's just going to push standard Republican nonsense and anti-vax and all that jazz. And that we can survive that. So I'm hopeful that this wave of anti-democracy will burn out. But I don't think it's because the Democrats doing anything to stop it. I think it'll just burn out on its own like a forest fire. Or an uncontrolled disease.
I think the important takeaway here is to always remember that there is a portion of the population. It's not a majority, but it's like, you know, 10 to 20% that are just fine with us not having a democracy. It might seem like all Americans are on board with this democracy thing. Not all Americans are on board still. And, you know, and that's just something we need to fight against and maintain our democracy and just be vigilant. As they say, freedom isn't free. And the cost of freedom is vigilance, which is very corny, but true.
Well, sure, but I don't see any Democrats being militant against the Republicans. And I'm not even sure that's a wise plan.
I didn't say anything about militarism or being militant. It is, you know, calling out, you know, fascists, having an anti-fascist movement, you know, and, you know, just speaking up when you see something that, you know, is a threat to democracy and have discussions. Don't just, one of the big mistakes that was made in the past is that the populace at large, the majority, would see these lunatics, this fringe anti-democracy crowd, and just say, these people are nuts, we'll just ignore them. And that is not a wise strategy. You have to confront them and you have to explain to people why this is, why these ideas are dangerous. Like, you know, pretending that the election was stolen. This is a very dangerous tactic, one that can easily backfire in the long run, and is not something that should be allowed in our democracy. So,
yeah, I think the January 6th Commission is doing a very good job of putting out the facts and education. And I guess I tend to agree. That's where I think we need to do. We need to hope that the truth will eventually win. Anyway, let's go on to you. You've discovered VR is stressful.
Right. I know. Go figure. in today's related news, water is wet. Okay. There we go. So PC Gamer, the greatest of all journalistic endeavors, has an article talking about working in VR being extremely stressful. And now I say PC Gamer has this article. It's actually based off this paper right here, which is quantifying the effects of working in VR for 1 week, which is a, you know, they basically put participants into a VR workspace and, you know, looked at their stress levels and monitored their biometrics and got some results about what it's like working in VR for a week. And surprise, surprise, let's look at the conclusion down here, and I'll switch back to my full face cam. Let's see. So the study revealed that, as expected, VR resulted in significantly worse ratings across most measures. For example, VR resulted in below average system usability scale ratings, while the physical environment resulted in above average ratings. We also found that VR resulted in the worst category of simulator sickness, although the severity decreased slightly across the week. And some participants like dropped out the first day. They're like, we're not having this. I can't hear you, Sam. I can't hear you at all.
Are they wearing a box on their head that blocks their peripheral vision and all that?
Yes, they are.
That tends to make people sick and disoriented, right?
It takes time. I mean, that's one of the things about VR that's kind of frustrating. I jumped into VR and I had no problems right away. I didn't feel any VR sickness, but there are a lot of people that put on these boxes on their heads, and it sets an immersive experience. It just messes with your senses. Gosh, like if you want to be scared, go into a VR like scary simulator, because you will feel like you're actually under attack because it's that immersive. And it can make people extremely sick, especially when they're moving around the world and they don't have that feedback of moving around. And you see people who are new to VR falling over. Eventually, you get your VR legs. It's a bit like getting your sea legs. Hmm. And you can go around the VR world and do whatever you want, and it takes time. But if you are new, you've never done VR before, it can take a lot of time to get used to it. And as the article said, yeah, people after the first day were just like, no, we can't take it anymore. And they have to take it off. They get sick. I find it gives me headaches after a while. Like I have to limit my exposure to about, and this has mostly to do with the fact that the technology is just not as mature as it should be. Like you're wearing a big box on your head instead of like little glasses that just project the world around you. And that extra pressure and weight and stuff, it just gives me a headache. And you have to focus it directly over your eyes. So if it's slightly off, you can get eye strain and stuff. I mean, it's really a, even though, you know, VR has been in the work for decades. Even though it's made it to mainstream, it's still not, you know, a perfected technology yet. It still has a way to go before it can be really good. And then even when it gets really good and comfortable, there's still going to be a period of people getting their VR legs. And this is true, like when games started moving to 3D, a lot of people playing video games couldn't handle the 3D experience. And nowadays, of course, everyone can play, you know, 3D games, but it's the same thing all over again, but even more so because VR, like I said, can really mess with your senses.
I'm not sure there's much of a use case for VR. I think AR is where it's at, where you don't erase the world, but you add something to it.
Right. I agree as well. I think that if you're working for work purposes, AR is the future. In fact, a lot of VR helmets, including the one that I use, have cameras on the outside. And I wish they utilized them more because it is so much easier. Like, especially like, I know when you go into the quote unquote desktop of like Steam VR, you go into like this virtual room with like screens and everything. But I found it much more intuitive and much safer if I have the camera on and I just pop up windows in the real world that I can just see. And then if I want to go into like the full VR world, you know, thing, I can do that. But for work applications, I agree, AR is the way to go. And I wish it would be utilized more in mainstream applications.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like the Iron Man movie. That's what he has. He just puts the windows up in the sky instead of on a monitor, and it looks useful.
It's not as useful as you would think, although it is kind of useful in the sense that you can sort of customize your desktop. But the windows in VR are not as good as the windows in real life, or the monitors in real life.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to substitute my real monitors with a VR monitor, but it is nice that you can sort of customize your work environment. And you can add things to the real world. Like, for example, you can see data about certain objects. Or like a CAD, for example, I think is a really good use of virtual reality, where if you are modeling something like a car and you want to see what it looks like in real life without going through the process of modeling out the whole thing and creating a scale model, you can just go into your AR or even VR and view the CAD. But once again, the technology is not widespread enough that we all need it. It's not like word processing, where we all need to jump on board and use word processing. It's just niche applications where it would have a very useful impact.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the head of Kraken has come out and decided to say we will not have any more brainwashed woke talk here. Now the head of Coinbase, maybe 6 months ago, said, let's have no politics at work. You're here to work. Let's not have any of these arguments over politics or something. And if you don't like it, you can just leave. And a few people left. And after that, people seem to settle down and they seem to find that to be okay. That's not a huge burden. In fact, I think that was the old rules of politeness when I was a kid. You never talk about politics or religion. But what he's got here, I think, is basically what Elon Musk says he wants for Twitter. He calls what he means when he says free speech is I get to say anything I want and nobody else gets to complain about it. So he refuses to use people's chosen pronouns if they're transsexual, or I probably got the wrong word there. But anyway, and he doesn't think anybody can complain about using racial slurs and women are just brainwashed and inferior and stuff like that. And he thinks he should be allowed to say all that. Nobody can complain. And that's free speech. So wait.
So what does this have to do with the company that does not allow for politics?
That's the other one. That was Coinbase. Coinbase just said no politics and apparently actually lived up to that. And people were able to live with that. This guy claims people need to stop being so sensitive. And this is his plan of like appropriate workplace discussion.
Okay. Right. So I'm not going to call it the wedging an issue. It's not quite like that, but it's what the racists and bigots like to do to get a foothold. Is that they don't outright say things like women are inferior and we should, you know, lock them up, or that black people are, you know, shouldn't be airplane pilots. I don't know what they could say. Yeah. But what they try to do is they try to wedge in a little bit at a time and say, you know, it's just free speech. It's just free speech. And it's important just to cut that off at the stem, you know, really recognize what they're doing is that this is not some innocent person who just thinks, you know, oh, we should just be able to say whatever we want. And oh, these silly snowflakes are just overreacting. This is a bigot trying to, you know, wedge in, you know, bigoted ideas, you know, until they become mainstream enough that they can just come out and say what they really want.
Yeah. And I think this is extremely common. They just mean everybody has to agree with me. And that's what I call free speech. And anybody that doesn't agree with me is just wrong and their speech doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, and that's the most telling thing is just how hypocritical these people are, is that they talk about free speech, but of course they don't really want free speech for other people. They just want to be able to say racist or bigoted things without consequence, which...
Yeah, of course. Now, he says it's fine if you're offending people on the other side, and so does Elon Musk, but I highly doubt they actually mean it. Anyway, yeah. This may all mean nothing, as crypto seems to be absolutely crashing and burning, and all these companies may just vanish. We'll see. So far, Kraken's alive and Coinbase is alive, but they're both in bad shape.
Yeah, no, this crypto crash. I mean, I don't have any crypto holdings whatsoever.
But
it's affecting, it's affecting the entire stock market. I just looked at my stock portfolio and cried a little tear for.
Well, I don't think the crypto is dragging down the stock market. I think it's the opposite. I think the supply chain is dragging down everything.
Right.
And crypto is amplifying the motions of the stock market, which is upsetting a lot of people because the original plan was crypto would move opposite to the stock market. And that is not what happened.
No, not at all.
And so everybody's going to say, wait a minute, this was the whole point of crypto, is that it would be different than stocks. So what good is it anyway, if it's going to just move the same way stocks do?
Yes.
And of course, the main thing is everybody's just stealing the money right and left, which is, it's crooked as hell. That's the problem.
People have no sense of adventure with their money.
They have too much sense of adventure with their money right now. And they're beginning, I think, to realize they should have less sense of adventure. Anyway. And you've got the most important thing with no misconduct at Blizzard.
Oh, yes, no misconduct. So, Activision Blizzard. Okay, I don't even know where to begin with this. PC Gamer, once again, the crux of news on the internet, has an article talking about how Blizzard, Activision Blizzard's, find no evidence of widespread misconduct at Activision Blizzard. Okay, so Blizzard is investigating itself and found it did nothing wrong. Okay, so what is this about? So for people that don't know, Activision Blizzard has been known for a few abuses going all the way to the top. Basically, Bobby Kotick is the CEO, and he's been accused for years of essentially creating a boys club at Activision. And so there's another story that sort of explains the background of this. Also, once again, for PC Gamer, the crux of news. Like, if you want to know what's going on in the world, just go to PC Gamer. Forget the Wall Street Journal. Forget Bloomberg. Forget the New York Times. PC Gamer. So there's another article here on the site, and it says that there are 700 reports of incidents of misconduct during Bobby Kotick's tenure at the company. And there was a particular suit that says on the first day of work back in 2017, so not that long ago, an employee was taken to an initiation lunch where she was pressured to do like tequila shots and reveal embarrassing secrets to everyone present and participate in something called like cube crawl, in which the women at the company were groped and submitted to sexual comments and you know, go to these after hour things where people were supposed to create quote unquote creative answers to like sexual questions. I mean, this stuff is really bad. And this is not the only suit that was filed against the company, but there are many suits. But of course, Activision Blizzard investigated itself and found, oh no, it did nothing wrong. Everything is fine.
Haven't there been lawsuits or something? I mean, this is outrageous in modern America that you treat people like that.
There absolutely have been many lawsuits. In fact, that's what I was describing. It was one specific lawsuit where it went into details about what was going on at the company. And so the original article that talks about Activision Blizzard investigating itself, said that the conclusion was shared by the company on June 16th in a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And it says that, quote unquote, the allegations in media and legal filings about our companies were as distressing to us as they were to you. Uh-huh. Okay, sure. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Okay,
lawsuits are probably distressing. Yeah, they might.
They make them look bad. Yeah, they make them look bad. We don't want that. So, quote unquote, continuing, progressively stronger, more decisive and coordinated steps it has taken. So it says it has made steps to resolve the things that apparently have not happened. it basically says that everything has been, you know, Activision Blizzard has investigated itself and found itself totally innocent.
Does that, so did they have to pay out money for the lawsuits at least or something?
That's a good question. I don't know if the lawsuits, about the outcome of it, any of the lawsuits. I'd have to get back to you on that.
Now that does sound ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, this is not like a one person says this and another person says that. Although I will say that in our culture at large, we have a tendency to not believe women who come forward with these allegations.
Yeah, there's 700 of them, I think.
Right. But I mean, there's 700 of them. But when even if there's just one allegation, I think it's important for us to step back and say we need to take this seriously.
Yeah.
But there were 700 allegations. This happened. This really, really did happen. And we really do need to hold Activision accountable. But it appears Activision is not taking itself to be accountable, as one would expect.
Yeah, I mean, if they're letting it get that bad, they must have a real entrenched bro culture of just pretending this is okay.
Right. I mean, and that's really what it really comes down to, is that they have a tech bro culture at the company that has gone out of hand. And
I would say so. Yeah. Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, anyway, in lighter news, China has discovered aliens. They put up a telescope called the Sky Eye, and they say they have picked up alien signals. So I think it's time for the alien space race. Now NASA's going to investigate the UFOs here. It looks like we're in for a wave of alien hysteria, as if there's not enough stupidity in our culture right now. We're going to add this on top.
So, okay, so 2 points. One, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's not aliens. Okay. Like it's not
aliens. I'm saying it's not aliens.
Yes. I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's definitely not aliens. The UFO thing is actually kind of more interesting. Because with UFOs, you're not saying that they are aliens, right? You're just saying that these are things that we're seeing. We don't know what they are. And we really want to identify what's being picked up on cameras. And we know for a fact there are things being picked up on cameras. We don't know what exactly they are. It could be anything from just natural phenomenon to, you know, tests being carried out, you know, by Lockheed Martin. Who knows? Almost certainly it's not aliens. But the UFO thing makes much more sense than the China thing saying that they, you know, found aliens. They did not find aliens. No one found aliens. We're not talking to aliens.
The Chinese think they're finding aliens.
Okay, yeah. And Activision Blizzard did absolutely nothing wrong.
That's right. Well, and actually this last one of yours I thought was really quite important. The Plops framing people in India.
Yeah, no, this was kind of scary. Wired has an article talking about police using some of their hacking tools to frame activists. So a lot of policing agencies, like the FBI, for example, have hacking tools like Cellebrite, which they can use to perform forensics on phones or computers. They have things like Axiom. They can get into, perform forensics, gather evidence, take it to a court, that kind of thing. Wired looked at the local police department and in India. And what they're doing is they're using these tools to essentially fabricate evidence to put on computers in order to arrest dissidents, essentially, like activists, which is scary. You know, because you think about it, to put it in terms I think more Americans can understand, you know, you think about professional federal agents like the FBI, which has its own problems, don't get me wrong, but like the FBI, Department of Defense, you know, these people are generally, you think of as being well-educated, you know, and they're just government agents, you know, doing their thing. And if they have these tools, they're going to use it to find criminals or whoever the government decides is a bad person. But when you put these tools into local law enforcement agencies, it can get much dicier very quickly. And I'm not saying it's not dicey in federal hands, but in local hands, oh my gosh, this could be totally misused. And that's what's going on in India, where the local police are using it to essentially frame people they don't like.
Yeah, I think this is important. I'm going to put this in my forensics class next semester, because this is like the first defense anybody has in a trial is, oh, somebody else put that stuff on my computer. I didn't really do it. And the usual answer of an examiner is, in principle, that could happen. But in practice, nobody ever really does that. And I don't think we can say that anymore.
No, we can't. So yeah, early, like, I think in like 2021, Arsenal Consulting looked at a laptop and found that there was evidence that it was completely fabricated on the machine. So there was a piece of malware called NetWire, and it had it added 32 files into a folder, including a letter that made it look like the defendant was conspiring with a group of people who were banned. But of course, like I said, it was totally fabricated. Like, they knew that it was made with a version of Word that the defendant never had even had installed on the computer. And it also looked like there was evidence that it was hacked to put that NetWire malware on the machine in the first place. So we know that it definitely was hacked by the law enforcement to frame the defendant.
Yeah. Reminds me of all those police cameras showing people dropping drugs on people they're arresting and stuff like that.
Right. This is the consequence of putting hacking tools in law enforcement. I mean, and I don't get it. I mean, do law enforcement people get paid per person they get put away? I mean, I know when I do digital forensics, I don't care if the person is guilty or innocent. I just want to figure out what's going on. And I don't really understand the political pressures that would put police or anyone, to frame someone for a crime like that. I mean,
I understand the pressure. And you can see it in San Francisco right now. The people get really mad when the cops arrest people who appear obviously guilty and they just let them go. And the cops generally feel like, we know this guy's a gangbanger. We know we need to lock him up. And then there's always this stupid defense arguments that make no sense. So I think they generally feel justified in coming up with any excuse to lock people up. They're convinced they're guilty. And they see the entire defense team as just aiding and abetting criminals.
Right. But even still, I mean, you're still fabricating evidence, which is...
That's true. But you're getting a bad guy off the street, which is their main priority. You think of it like a soldier in war. The only thing is to win. Dirty tricks are fine if you win.
Yes. But yeah, no, it's just so unethical. I can't imagine.
It is.
Yeah.
But combat tends to be unethical. Yeah, that's the hard part. Anyway, we certainly don't want cops doing that. And it really is a shame that they're doing that. It's good for Arsenal. And I think also that Canadian group is in on this one that does a lot of research into human rights abuses of activists. So it's those people are doing good work. All right, well, that's it for this one, and we'll be back on Tuesday.